Greetings. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Amy Wentley from the North Carolina Reading Service, and for the next hour I will be reading to you from Oprah Magazine. We'll start off today with a very exciting announcement from Oprah. She announces her 113th book club pick. Let the Bayhive and the Bookworms Unite, she says. The book is Matriarch by Tina Knowles. That's K-N-O-W-L-E-S. Spring is here and the Bayhive is buzzing. Today on CBS Mornings, Oprah revealed that she has selected Matriarch by Tina Knowles as her latest book club selection. Some of you might know Tina Knowles is the mother of a superstar, as in Beyoncé, but she is also a highly successful entrepreneur, a fashion designer, philanthropist, and now the author of this fascinating memoir of her journey to become the global figure she is today, Oprah said. You're going to want to clear your schedule as you're going to be totally riveted by the twists and turns of this deeply personal and compelling story. Just in time for Mother's Day, Ms. Tina's memoir is the story of raising and being raised by powerful black women, beginning with her childhood in segregated Galveston, Texas. Knowles writes candidly about her family history, her time on the road with Destiny's Child, watching her iconic children take flight on the global stage, overcoming infidelity, and coming into her own at age 70. Writing a book about your life is a scary thing, Knowles confessed. It's almost like having a baby. Learning that Oprah had not only read the book, but loved it enough to select it for her book club made it all okay and came as a total shock. I had no idea that I would be talking to Oprah when she called, recalled Knowles. They tricked me and told me that it was the printing company. When she heard the voice on the other end, she immediately burst into tears. I mean, it's Oprah, Knowles explained. She is the queen of many things, but definitely the quintessential queen of books. Being told that my book would be a pick for her book club, I thought I had died and gone to heaven. One might think that the mother of Beyoncé and Solange is immune from being starstruck, but apparently celebrities really are just like us. Matriarch is the latest selection in Oprah's ongoing collaboration with Starbucks. The partnership offers the same must-read book club recommendations from Oprah, along with newly formatted author interviews and official Starbucks beverage pairings for each monthly pick. Oprah and Ms. Tina discuss the book over cups of Starbucks Sansara blend and alongside a live audience at Starbucks Reserve Roastery in Chicago. You can watch the full thought-provoking conversation about the book's themes of black motherhood, human resilience, and creative genius for free on Oprah's YouTube channel. You can also listen to it on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok for more book club content and conversations. We are excited to hear what you think of this empowering memoir. And here is a related article. Get your tickets to see Gail King and Tina Knowles discuss Matriarch. Our editor-at-large will join Michelle Obama as a moderator on the Matriarch book tour. In a little over a month, Matriarch, a memoir, well, hit shelves, I believe, will be hitting shelves. Tina Knowles' highly anticipated book, in which she opens up about everything from her childhood in Texas to how she became the ultimate musical matriarch to daughters Beyoncé and Solange. Yesterday on Instagram, Knowles shared the schedule for her first ever book tour, which will begin in Washington, D.C. with a conversation moderated by former First Lady Michelle Obama. While yesterday's post kept us in the dark as to who would be joining her on the other eight stops, today we get to share that our very own editor-at-large, Gail King, will be the moderator for Knowles' May 19th event at the Brooklyn Paramount. There's an Instagram post here that also lists the other dates and the other folks who will be joining Knowles during this tour. So just I'll give you an overview here. So as I said, we were starting in Washington, D.C., and that was going to be moderated by Mrs. Michelle Obama. And on May 2nd, in Los Angeles, California, it'll be moderated by Miss Kiki Palmer. On May 5th, in Houston, Texas, that panel will be moderated by Mrs. Kelly Rowland. On May 8th, in Atlanta, Georgia, it will be moderated by Mr. Tyler Perry. On May 10th, in New Orleans, Louisiana, the moderator will be Mrs. Tamron Hall. On May 12th, in Toronto, Ontario, the moderator will be CNN's Mrs. Abby Phillip. On May 16th, in Chicago, Illinois, the moderator will be CNN's Mrs. Laura Coates. And in May 19th, in Brooklyn, New York, the moderator will be Mrs. Gail King. There will also be a session in London in the UK on June 9th. There is not a moderator set for that yet. It's the tickets go on sale. Sorry, I'm looking at an Instagram post and that was pre-order. Thank you for your patience. It says tickets go on sale tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. local. And I unfortunately do not see a date on that post. So tickets may be on sale right now. Sorry, I can't give you more information. But I will continue on with the article. While Knowles is best known as the mother of two cultural icons, in her aptly titled debut memoir, she is finally telling her own story from her upbringing in Galveston, Texas, to her time on the road with Destiny's Child, to watching her superstar children take flight on the global stage. Well, we have to wait until today to get our hands on a copy. So this is the day the book actually launches. Okay. We already know that the book will give Gail and Ms. Tina plenty to discuss. Oh, and here's the date for the ticket sale. Tickets for the tour go on sale tomorrow, Friday, March 21st. So the tickets have already been on sale. So check Ticketmaster. You might get lucky. I hope you get a chance to get the book and perhaps get a chance to see this wonderful author in person. Speaking of books, we have a lot of folks who are going to be graduating in the next couple of months, and this article suggests the 14 best books to give a recent graduate. Titles to celebrate what they've accomplished and prepare them for what's next. Nora Ephron said, "Your education is a dress rehearsal for a life that is yours to lead. Still, come graduation, even the most well-prepped students often feel that they are going out into the world a little naked. These books will help keep them covered, guiding them through all the life skills that the rehearsal never prepared them for, from cooking to decorating to handling their finances. Along with practical guides, other books on this list show readers that they are not alone in the big post-school world. Yes, everyone makes mistakes on their first job. Yes, everyone struggles to find an identity that isn't just borrowed or collaged from the identity of those around them. Yes, everyone ends up overcooking stovetop rice. Nobody, no matter what their stage of life, needs another generic platitude, and that's what makes these books so special. They say congratulations in a meaningful way, offer useful advice, and above all, help the reader with perspective. While so many graduation gifts end up in mom and dad's basement, move out day is tough. These titles will end up on the graduate's next bookshelf, wherever they may be. So toss those caps, pop some champagne, and get reading. Our first book is A Few Rules for Predicting the Future by Octavia E. Butler. It appears as of today. That's $14 at Amazon or $14 at Bookshop. In just 60 lushly illustrated pages, the author of Kindred and Parable of the Sower makes a stunning case for informed hope in an unstable world. Long admired for the sci-fi masterpieces she wrote prior to her death in 2006, Butler has gained new notoriety in recent years as many of her invented plot lines became real-world headlines. See A Vision of 2025 Los Angeles Engulfed in Wildfires, an authoritarian president coming to power under the campaign slogan, Make America Great Again. But while many of the quote-unquote predictions in her fiction tend toward the catastrophic, her actual worldview, as articulated in a 2000 essay for Ebony magazine and reprinted in this hardcover edition, is decidedly hopeful. In response to a student asking if we were doomed, the hauntingly prescient author insists on our power to create change in the midst of political, economic, and environmental devastation. A full-throated love letter to our species and to our shared future that will make even the most cynical grad feel ready to take on the world. So again, that was A Few Rules for Predicting the Future by Octavia E. Butler. Number two on the list is We Can Do Hard Things by Glennon Doyle, Abby Wambach, and Amanda Doyle. It looks like this edition is on sale at Amazon for $22, $23 at Bookshop. How do I figure out what I want? Who am I really? How do I feel better right now? What is the point? Unfortunately, for your recent grad, these are questions that don't simply disappear with time. Fortunately for them and you, best-selling authors and award-winning podcasters Glennon Doyle, Abby Wambach, and Amanda Doyle have been collecting answers to them, and 16 other big-time stumpers from the people most equipped to offer guidance. Gathering insights from Michelle Obama on staying in love, Chelsea Handler on getting over a broken heart, and Martha Beck on overcoming anxiety, this book offers a cheat sheet to living that we wish we would have peeked up at when we were younger. And again, that book is We Can Do Hard Things by Glennon Doyle, Abby Wambach, and Amanda Doyle. Now, on to number three, How to Be Grown Up by Rafi Grinberg. $23 at Amazon, $23 at Bookshop. Unlike many self-help books aimed at young adults, this one is actually written by somebody who understands and has himself overcome the unique challenges of the present world they're graduating into. Now, in his 30s, Grinberg created and taught the exceptionally popular Adulting 101 course at Boston College, in part to fill a gap left in his own education. Despite graduating with honors and a degree in mathematics from Princeton University, he felt totally unprepared for the challenges of life outside the confines of his dorm room, from planning for retirement to handling romantic rejection. Broken into four sections, mental skills, financial skills, relationship skills, and career skills, this book offers straightforward and relatable advice on everything your grad's college syllabi didn't cover. And again, that book is the How to Be a Grown-Up, The 14 Essential Skills You Didn't Know You Needed Until Just Now, by Rafi Grinberg. And now we're on to book number four, Lessons from My Teachers, by Sarah Ruhl. That's R-O-H-L. Sarah ends with an H. That's $27 at Amazon, $27 at Bookshop. In this tender collection of mini essays, the award-winning author and playwright reflects on the power of teachers to shape and reshape our lives in ways both big and small. In a dark period in her life, Ruhl found herself retreating into the rectangle of her phone screen, a common crutch for many of us when the world outside feels too big to manage. The internet promises all the information we could ever want at our fingertips, but scrolling, she found few real answers and a lot of loud opinions. She longed for her former teachers, the human ones, not the ones on my screen. These are the teachers she resurrects on these pages. The principal who taught her that profound kindness can come in intimidating packages. The sister who taught her that most fun does not require planning. The art instructor who taught her that sometimes the teacher is wrong and you should refuse to do their assignment. Taken together, or savored individually, these stories will invite your grad to reflect on the teachers, both formal and informal, who got them where they are and the power of human instruction to get them where they want to go. And again, this book is Lessons from My Teachers by Sarah, S-A-R-A-H, Ruhl, R-U-H, L. And now on to book number five, All That Happiness Is by Adam Gopnik. That would be $12 at Amazon, $12 at Walmart. This is one that every one of us, and recent graduates especially, needs to hear. In just 47 pages, New Yorker staff writer Adam Gopnik holds up a mirror to our achievement-obsessed world, bent on monetizing every hobby and accelerating every career move, and opens a door to a brighter future, one with accomplishment at its center. For those frantically looking around at other people's awards, GPAs, graduate school acceptances, and prestigious job opportunities, this book offers permission to look inward for satisfaction by tapping into passions and pursuing your hobbies, not as a means to an end, but as an end all its own. Though Gopnik doesn't mince his words, for instance, if we make life a subject to rule of achievement, does it pay? Does it work? We not only betray our values, but we make a joke of our time on earth. His overall argument is both humble and motivating, and the book is slim enough to fit in even the most cramped hatchback on move-out day. And once again, this book, number 5, is entitled All That Happiness Is by Adam Gopnik. Moving on to book number 6, HBCU Made by Aisha Rasko. So that's H as in Harry, B as in ball, C as in cat, U as in unicorn, Made by Aisha Rasko. It is a celebration of the Black college experience. Edited by Howard Grad and NPR's Weekend Edition Sunday host Aisha Rasko, this collection features 17 powerhouse voices as they reflect on their experience at historically Black colleges and universities, from politician Stacey Abrams to Oprah's book club author Honoré Fanon Jeffers to Oprah herself. These stories not only affirm the value of these particular institutions, but also help graduates of any school recognize the scale of their accomplishments. You may find them inspiring yourself. These are some of the most influential voices of our era, and decades after leaving school, their education has continued. And once again, the book title is HBCU Made by Aisha Rasko. That is $14 at Amazon. Book number 7. Dinner in One by Melissa Clark. Exceptional and easy one-pan meals. $17 at Amazon. The book contains 100 recipes all made in one pot, pan, or dish. Recent grads have so much on their plates. At the very least, this book will ensure that they will have fewer to wash at the end of the night. The New York Times columnist and cookbook author breaks down dozens of easy, healthy, and budget-friendly meals from sheet pan meatball subs to one bowl cardamom pound cake, alongside her recipes for deceptively simple showstoppers and weeknight mainstays. Clark provides basic kitchen knowledge that may have eluded even the most experienced chef. You might want to snap a picture of the fail-safe rice recipe before you gift wrap. And once again, that book is Dinner in One by Melissa Clark, Exceptional and Easy One-Pan Meals. Moving on to book number 8, How Should a Person Be by Sheila Hetty. And you can get that on sale, $11 at Amazon. Although this book is technically fiction, it reads in turns like a self-help manual, a spiritual text, and a transcript of ever-floundering 20-year-old's thoughts, if those thoughts were consistently hilarious and revelatory, based largely on the author's own youth. A fictional narrator, coincidentally also named Sheila, becomes obsessed with the question of how should a person be, asking it explicitly of everyone she meets, and trying to define a formula for her own existence by noticing the way people dressed, the way they treated their lovers. In everyone, there was something to envy. in trying to collect and select from a growing collection of other people's ways of being in the world, Sheila inadvertently fashions an identity all her own. And again, that book was number 8, excuse me, How Should a Person Be by Sheila Hetty. Our next book, number 9, is The Defining Decade by Meg J., PhD. The title, the cover title says, The Defining Decade, Why Your 20s Matter, and How to Make the Most of Them Now. This is an updated edition, and I think I said it's already on sale for $12 on Amazon. So there you go. In the more than a decade since its publication, this best-selling nonfiction guide to making the most of one's terrible 20s has achieved cult status with devotees ranging from Harvard PhDs to pop star and newly minted 20-something Olivia Rodrigo. While many of us simply white-knuckle our way through the years between 19 and 30, trying our best to keep our head above water and occasionally ingest something besides Trader Joe's frozen cauliflower gnocchi, Jay argues that our 20s should not be endured, but optimized. Drawing from decades of research and dozens of stories, this so-called patron saint of striving youth outlines why these years are the most socially, economically, and professionally valuable of our life. While this may sound like a quarter-life crisis bound between two covers, Jay's tone is both motivating and intensely practical, leaving readers empowered to take the helm of years that often wash us over. And again, this book is The Defining Decade by Meg J., PhD. Number 10, Rental Style by Chelsea Brown. The title of this book says, Rental Style, The Ultimate Guide to Decorating Your Apartment or Small House, 200 Chic and Modern Design Tips by Chelsea Brown, founder of City Chic Decor, forward by Kimberly Duran, creator of Swoon Worthy. And this is available for $23 at Amazon. Chances are, your soon-to-be grad's interior decorating skills have thus far been limited to printing out album cover posters in the library and stuffing old soda bottles with dried, read, dead flowers. Help them adjust to the raised expectational and personal standards of adult living with this chic edition, which focuses on making the most of the small and rented spaces that, for better or worse, they will likely be inhabiting for many years to come. Brown is a straight shooter when it comes to telling readers which pieces are worth investing in and which are just as good from IKEA as from West Elm. And the sleek design of the book itself will ensure that the giftee will have at least one grown-up decor piece, even if it is relegated to the coffee table. And once more, this book number 10 is Rental Style by Chelsea Brown. Moving on to book 11, Navigate Your Stars by Jessamyn Ward. It's on sale at Amazon, 19% off for $13. This illustrated edition of Ward's infectiously inspirational address at Tulane's commencement is perfect to gift not only to recent grads, but to anyone in need of support and inspiration. In 2018, Ward, the 2-time National Book Award winner and author of Oprah's 130 third book club pick, took to the stage to offer the graduating class some words of wisdom on an unexpected subject for a renowned author, failure. In the speech, she reveals her own postgraduate floundering in her mistaken belief that education alone would grant her a better life than those who came before her. My years in college and afterward taught me this. Success is not the result of making one good choice or taking one step. Real success requires step after step after step. It requires choice after choice. It demands education and passion and commitment and persistence and hunger and patience. If you weren't lucky enough to score a seat in the audience when Ward delivered her original address, this book is the next best thing. Once again, book 11 is entitled Navigate Your Stars by Jesmyn Ward. On to book 12, Get a Financial Life by Beth Koebleiner. The front title of the cover says, the New York Times bestseller updated with everything you need to know now. Get a Financial Life, Personal Finance in Your 20s and 30s. It's on sale at Amazon for $10 and at Walmart for $10. Your grad has learned it all. Post-Marxist theory and art history, calculus and bioethics, everything, it seems. Besides how to file their taxes or save for retirement, you know, the little stuff. This New York Times bestseller will fill the gaps in their hard-won education with accessible and engaging guidance on everything from crafting a savings plan for the month to building financial habits for a lifetime. Koebleiner, who, in 2010, was selected by President Obama to be a member of the President's Advisory Council on Financial Capability, breaks complex money problems into simple action steps and manages to write on a young person's level without seeming condescending, even when she's giving financial advice to Elmo. And once again, that book was entitled, it's number 12, Get a Financial Life by Beth Koebleiner, K-O-B-L-I-N-E-R. And next is book number 13, Dear Intern, edited by Mara Nelson Greenberg. It's $10 on sale at Amazon and $10 on sale at Walmart. The cover says, Dear Intern, workplace blunders, mishaps, and major disasters from professionals who have seen and done it all. Let's be real. Nobody strides into their first job and knocks it out of the park. It's an unwritten law that you're going to have some oops moments. This book makes the unwritten written, including dozens of hilarious letters from still employed adults on their recent career blunders. While the career advice sandwiched between these letters is useful, mostly for a good laugh. For example, do ask your coworker if they've seen the game. Don't ask your coworker if they've seen the new article on loneliness. The letters themselves are surprisingly useful. Embedded in each cringeworthy account is a real lesson. Don't beat yourself up. Always read instructions all the way to the end. Remember that you can't predict the future. And, of course, it can only go up. And that was book number 13, Dear Intern, edited by Mara Nelson Greenberg. Book number 14, The Sky is the Limit by Lisa Swerling and Ralph Lazar, L S-W-E-A-Z-A-R. Swirling is S-W-E-R-L-I-N-G. $15 on Amazon. The cover says The Sky is the Limit, a celebration of all the things you can do by Lisa Swirling and Ralph Lazar. Dr. Seuss's Oh, the Places You'll Go has become the go-to gift book for recent grads. But if you want to stand out from the crowd and steer clear of a culture war, consider this picture book from the best-selling husband and wife team behind Me Without You. Though technically a children's book, the illustrations, including a full-page graduation scene, will charm readers of all ages. Post-grad life can feel scary, but this book is a loving reminder that a world full of wonder is waiting for you. The sky is the limit of what you can do. And that was book number 14, The Sky is the Limit by Lisa Swirling and Ralph Lazar. This article was written by Charlie Burlock. He is the books editor at Oprah. Charlie Burlock is the book editor at Oprah Daily, where she writes, edits, and assigns stories of all things literary. She holds an MFA in creative nonfiction from NYU, where she also taught undergraduate creative writing. Her work has been featured in The Atlantic, The Los Angeles Review of Books, Hyperallergic, and the Apple News Today podcast and elsewhere. You can read her writing at charlieburlock.com. Our next article is Six Tips for Starting and Maintaining a Thriving Book Club. Author Jean Hanf Korelitz offers some considerations to keep in mind as you convene or join a discussion group. Jean's name is spelled, it's Jean Hanf, H-A-N-F-F, and Korelitz, K-O-R-E-L-I-T-Z. Book groups. Isn't everyone kind of still in a book group that just hasn't met for some time? Or that fell apart because some people wanted to read the new JoJo Moyes and everyone else wanted to read The End of Innocence? Or that someone magically transformed itself into a monthly wine tasting get-together where no one bothers to read the selection anymore, let alone discuss it? None of that would surprise Carol Fitzgerald, the person who probably knows more about book groups than anyone else. She's the president of the Book Report Network, and her readinggroupguides.com site provides discussion guides for nearly 5,000 books to approximately 100,000 users each month. According to Fitzgerald, the average lifespan of a book group is only 2.5 years. Book groups are great, but they're still groups. And groups are notorious for including very different people with very different expectations. For some, a book group is a chance to deconstruct Anna Karenina. For others, it's an opportunity to chat about a nice beach read for a few minutes and then move on to current events, The White Lotus, or what the kids are up to, all while enjoying a nice Chardonnay. There's nothing wrong with either of those options, but more book groups dissolve over clashing expectations than any other issue. Will your group read the classics, the new Oprah selection, or the unquestioned choice of that month's host? Will you devote the meeting solely to literature, or will the book be more of an excuse to get together and relax with friends? A little care at the outset can avoid pitfalls ahead and set the stage for great reading experiences, invigorating conversations, and powerful explorations for years to come. Here are a few things to keep in mind as you convene or join a new book group. Number one, right from the start, be clear about the kinds of books you'll read. Books you didn't quite get in high school, books you pretended to read in college, fiction versus memoir, Reese versus Jenna. There are as many ways to set your course as there all are, well, as there are books calling out for your attention. Often, an unhappy book group member is unhappy because someone refuses to explore beyond their favorite genre, or because reading the chosen books are too much like work. Have an honest discussion at the outset about what kinds of books your group will read and try to be flexible. 9 months of Edith Wharton and a celebrity biography at Christmas, strictly police procedurals with a break for Dostoevsky over the summer, anything goes as long as everyone wants to go there. Tip two, give some thought to how you'll choose your selections. For many groups, choosing the next book takes up most of each meeting. Other groups appoint a single decider or leave the choice to the following month's host. There are groups in which several books are considered each month and voted on by the membership and groups that like to set their entire reading lists for the year ahead. Whatever you decide, stick to it. As Robert Frost once wrote, good fences make good neighbors, meaning that things go smoothly when everyone agrees to the same rules. Next, tip number three, size matters. A gathering of five or six readers has little in common with a room full of voices. On one hand, a small group can be ideal for conversation, but if one or two members have to miss a meeting due to illness or travel, the numbers can dip too low to allow for much of a conversation. On the other hand, too large of a group can feel unwieldy and institutional. Give some thought to what size will support the kind of group you want to be in. Hiring a leader. Number four, hiring a leader. Not everyone likes to go it alone. Some groups bring in a professional to keep them on topic and enhance their discussion with more specialized knowledge. Look at your local community college, university, or even high school for an after-hours teacher and invite them to design a reading list to help you with yours. Guiding conversation, providing background on the author or the book's context, or offering a second chance at some of the works you might not have given your full attention in 10th grade. These are just some of the ways a paid discussion leader can help you get the most out of last year's National Book Award winner or Jane Austen's catalog. Payment is a must here. Number five, invite the author. A few years ago, authors who were willing to visit book groups were relatively rare. But the pandemic changed all that. Now many authors are happy to Zoom into book group conversations. And if the book group is local, writers may sometimes agree to stop by and join the discussion in person. It's polite to offer payment and cover any travel expenses, a tank of gas, a train ticket if applicable, though some authors will decline. At the very least, however, each book group member should purchase the book if an author is attending in person. We all love our libraries, but this is not the time to turn up with a library copy. Don't be nervous. And don't worry about what to say if you didn't happen to like this book. You can still ask interesting questions and get interesting answers about how the book came into being or what might have surprised the author along the way. My own company, Book the Writer, that's the three words are all smashed together, no spaces, Book the Writer, offers small gatherings in New York apartments at which writers meet with small groups of readers. Though not a classic book group, readers attend only those discussions that interest them. The chance to sit down with a long-admired writer is truly special. Having an author present means that you can't talk about the book for 10 minutes and move on to other topics, but the quality of the conversation can be extraordinary. Instead of wondering aloud what the author might have intended, you can simply ask them. So, tip number 6, be forgiving. If no one else in your group wants to read Middlemarch, or if there's a majority vote for a book you consider unworthy of your beach blanket, try to roll with it anyway. You might find something to love in an author you were sure you'd hate, or become a convert to a whole new genre. Even if you don't care for this month's selection, it's just a book. When you go home at the end of the evening, you can start reading another one, something you alone have chosen. And if your group moves on after a few minutes to The Economy, The Crown, or the way someone's sleepless toddler just entertained them in the wee hours last night, that's fine too. At the end of the day, it was still a book that brought you all together, and the best thing about a book group. Jean Hanf Korolitz is the author of 8 novels, most recently The Plot and The Latecomer, and she's the creator of Book the Writer, which is bookthewriter.com, which hosts pop-up book groups at which readers can discuss new books with their authors. And now we'll move on to wellness. There's an article here talking about my shame changed my life. 5 women break their silence around childbirth injuries, eating disorders, strained family relationships, and more. This is a great article. I may not be able to finish it in the time we have, but I'm certainly going to give it a good try. As women, our lives are often shaped and even defined by shame, from the size of our bodies and the reproductive outcomes we experience to the relationships we share, how we grieve. There is no shortage of societal expectations and outdated stereotypes of womanhood that attempt to shame, silence, and ultimately dictate who we are and how we feel about ourselves. But the tide is slowly turning. In my work as a psychologist specializing in reproductive and maternal mental health, I am heartened to see how conversations regarding women's mental health, motherhood, miscarriage, birth, divorce, and more have changed in noteworthy ways. For one, we're having them. Discussing the not-so-picture-perfect outcomes of pregnancy, relationships, grief, and aging have become less taboo in recent years due in no small part to the grassroots efforts of ardent storytellers who have bucked stereotypes and outdated social expectations in the name of true authenticity and liberation. I wrote my new book, and just in case, I don't think I mentioned it at the first, I is Jessica Zucker. Okay? I wrote my new book, Normalize It, Upending the Silence, Stigma, and Shame That Shape Women's Lives. Because while I have seen what an isolating and debilitating force shame can be, I have also seen the compelling ripple effects that come with talking about the hard things. I have seen that when we abolish the master narrative that relies on should-haves and musts, we have the chance to exist in the mess without feeling we are the mess. Below are the stories of 5 women who have found a way to live in that vulnerable place, A place where they've laid it all out. No hiding, no pretending, no siphoning of feelings. Their stories have been edited for brevity and clarity. Amanda Osowski, 39, Illinois. For the past 7 years, Amanda has lived in what is described by antiquated BMI standards as morbidly obese body. She says her weight has been an issue at every doctor's appointment, physical therapy session, and with every medical specialist she has seen. It's also a quote, issue with friends, family members, and strangers on the internet who are, quote, concerned with her health and want her to, quote, be happier. What many people do not know is that Amanda lives with several autoimmune diseases, severe inflammation wreaking havoc on her organs, inadequate cortisone levels, immunosuppression, years of infertility, multiple miscarriage, and severe trauma stored in her body. A few years back, I actually had an endocrinologist tell me that because my cortisol levels went unchecked for so long, my weight likely will just be my weight. End of story. No adjustments available to me, no changing the narrative. When I heard this, I actually exhaled. It felt like I was being told it was okay to let go of these numbers, the ones on the scale, the ones that make up the BMI calculation, the ones on the tags of my clothes. Ultimately, that conversation did a lot to set me free. The shame surrounding my weight impacted me for a long time, not in a self-destructive kind of way, but in the way that I came to dread any encounter with a doctor or medical professional, comments from internet trolls, and even meeting new people. Mentally and emotionally, this took up a lot of space. It left me filled with anxiety, frustration, and even anger. If it was something I wanted to discuss, I'd bring it up. If I felt like I was being attacked or saddled with opinions and language surrounding my body and my weight from others, I'd often shy away from conversation, become extremely introverted, and struggle to articulate anything, let alone to stand up for myself or to be open about why things are the way they are for me. Unlearning the shame has involved recognizing and coming to terms with the fact that I am not doing, nor have I ever intentionally done, anything to gain weight to contribute to this problem, and I am not currently in the position to do anything about trying to lose weight or to reduce this, quote, problem. I don't feel shame. I feel understanding. I don't love what I have to work with, but it's kept me here alive and on this planet when it certainly didn't have to, even when there were moments I didn't think it was capable of doing so. So my size, while maybe unpleasant for some, is no longer the loudest thing dictating shame in my mind anymore. By no longer feeling owned by the shame I experienced, I'm free to live my life in this plus-size body, knowing that I am as much at peace with it as I possibly can be at this point. Jillian H., 34, from New England. Jillian grew up in a toxic environment with a mother whom she described as narcissistic, manipulative, and emotionally abusive. As a result, she would do everything in my power not to upset her mother. And when Jillian did experience an outburst of anger, the shame immediately set in and she internalized the message that she was to blame for her mother's behavior. It wasn't until I reached high school and started to expand my world outside the home that I realized how different my relationship with my parents was compared to those of my friends. This recognition continued into my college and adult years. It wasn't until my mid-20s that I finally started therapy and began to put together all the pieces. Half a dozen therapists later, I finally found the most amazing community this past year, a group led by a licensed mental health counselor called Untethered, which was created for women with strained relationships with their mother. While all of our stories are different, there was something so healing about being in a community that gets it. I always felt the need to explain the reason behind the boundaries I've created with my mother and have always felt judged by others. For the first time in my life, I felt none of that judgment or shame. And the next one is from Sarah Ezrin, 43, California. After years of taking the wrong medication for a generalized anxiety disorder that was misdiagnosed as bipolar, Sarah was skeptical of any psychiatric medication. Instead, she silently self-medicated with drugs and alcohol. While she was able to get sober after pursuing yoga, becoming a mom threw Sarah back into a mental health crisis. Despite obvious signs she needed help, prevailing stigma from the wellness community made her feel like prescription medication wasn't an option, but a failure. My postpartum period, which is an isolating time under normal circumstances in this country, coincided with COVID. What started as understandable intrusive thoughts evolved into crippling anxiety. I knew about postpartum depression, but postpartum anxiety was not something I'd heard of. It took until my son was 9 months old and I was frozen in tears more than I was functioning for my husband to say, I think it's time we get help. It was still deep COVID, so I found a psychiatric nurse practitioner online and started with telehealth therapy, including prescribed medication. Almost 5 years later, he continues to treat me. I still have some anxiety, but my controlling tendencies have abated considerably. I gave birth to my second son 3 years ago, and my postpartum experience was night and day because I was on my medication. What I realize in retrospect is that a lot of the shame and fear I had found around taking medication was because I wasn't on medication. Everything was catastrophized. I didn't realize that the very thing I was resisting was the thing that could help. Well, readers, that is the end of our show today. We have run out of time now, so this was Oprah Daily, and I very much hope you enjoyed it. And be sure to listen next time. I am Amy Wentley, and I am reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Oprah is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.